It is the WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning. We welcome to the WRMJ Airwaves. It's an honor. Gray Giovanni joining us this morning, the Augustana College men's basketball coach, 21 seasons. Good morning, Coach. I was looking at your biography, and I saw you back in the playing days, shot 90% from the free throw line down at Central Missouri. What about that? A lost art in this sport today. Good morning, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Well, 90.4%, but who's counting?
Well, I'm counting because you don't see that too often these days.
You might have looked out at our team through the years and wondered what the heck this story was, if their coach could shoot them, and sometimes the players couldn't. But it's yeah, that was fun. You're looking way back then, if you're reading that far back.
Yeah, well, and that's when I do these long form interviews, I like to start from the beginning. So where did the love of basketball come for Gray Giovanni?
Well, that's easy. I grew up. You know, I began going to practices in the fourth grade. My father was the coach at what was then Butte Western High School, which is now Bureau Valley High School. And my fourth grade teacher in Sheffield, Illinois, when school was over, she lived in Butte, where the high school was located. So I'd jump in the car with her, and she'd take me over to Butte, about 3 miles away, and I'd be there to roll the balls out as my dad was starting practice. So I just grew up in the gym, and kind of became a way of life, so to speak, and something I just was very natural and really enjoyed.
Now, you went to high school then. Where did you graduate from?
Yeah. Well, I went to, you know, again, it was Butte Western High School. Played for my father, and we had some terrific teams. My last 3 years there, we won 85 games and lost just six. And two of those teams made it to back then what was the state tournament in Champaign, Illinois, that took the final eight teams. And so two of those teams, my sophomore and junior year, went into that tournament undefeated. We were 29-0 one year and 31-0 another year. And so I graduated from there my senior year, and then my father left that season, at the end of that season. He was going to retire so he could spend time watching me play in college, and he retired for about 2 weeks, and then the LaSalle Peru job came open, and actually interviewed at three places, one of which was Moline. And then the LP job came open, and he took it. And Jim, I couldn't help but, as I was listening to your intro, one of the first players that captained a team of his was a guy named Randy Happ.
No kidding.
And so Randy was played for my father, and I would go back in when I was in college and work out with my dad's high school teams and players, and became good friends with Randy. And so when I came to Augustana, two of the first kids to enroll in my summer basketball camp were Randy's two sons. And they kind of grew up in our camp, and before we really got it going at Augustana, when there weren't many people coming to the games those first couple of years, the Happ family was on the front row. And as Randy said many times, he just hoped that Ethan would be good enough to play at Augustana someday. And my response since then has been, well, he was.
Well,
he was good enough.
Well, it's interesting because I remember when you were making one of those deep tournament runs, one of the TV stations, lo and behold, they scan over in a kid that's sitting in the front row of the student section, and this is at the height of Ethan's career at Wisconsin.
Right.
He's there cheering the Vikings on. Man, that's a surreal moment, isn't it?
Well, it is. He kind of grew up in our gym, you know, at our camps, and then he became great friends. Of course, he kind of really, fact matter, kind of idolized some of our players as he grew up. And then he became good friends with them. And in the AAU summer circuit that he played on, he became very good friends with Dylan Sortillo, who became a terrific player for us. So they had a great relationship. And Ethan was very comfortable in our gym. Actually, he was in our locker room after that game. But like I said, I've known him since he was just a little guy, and generational. My father was just loved Randy, and so there's kind of some great family ties there. But the basketball community is funny how often things intersect.
Well, it's great you know, hearing your backstory, where you grew up at and where you played at, and I'm a big guy that loves small town culture, small town history. I know I've done, I can't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago, Brad Bickett, of course, played at Ohio, just retired as head basketball coach at Rock Falls, a school of 60-some-odd kids. And, you know, he describes so vividly growing up in Ohio and how he learned to play basketball. And I remember last year I had the honor of interviewing Jack Sikma after he was inducted in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Of course, he played in the CCIW at Illinois Wesleyan, started at St. Anne in Kankakee County, and he grew up in an unincorporated area called Wichert. So I made contact with the Illinois Wesleyan to get his contact information, and I sent him an email because they wouldn't give me his phone number, and I just put in the subject line, Wichert Wonder, because that was where he grew up, and that's what he's called. And he emailed me back within like 10 minutes saying, I can talk to you right now, because nobody calls me the Wichert Wonder anymore. So what about like the culture of small-town basketball, that vibe of community basketball team? You know, and Sikma, when I was talking to Jack Sikma, I'm not kidding you, he said, you know, one of my biggest goals in life, and I said, what, playing in the NBA? He said, no. He says, when I was an eighth grader, he said, I wanted to make the varsity basketball team at St. Anne. So, you know, that's what I love about kind of interscholastic athletics and the vivid memories you have at such a young age of picking up the game. When you get that ball in your hand the first time, are you here, you know, you're in the empty gym working on your game and nobody's in there, and you hear that net snap, or you're, you know, at a playground and you hear the chain net. You hear the whoosh of that, and it's unfortunate they don't let people play at Lincoln Park in Rock Island, because I went to Alderman and I played there. I love that park. So, I mean, what about the game? That still resonates with you when I describe that type of stuff, right?
Oh, my. Well, listen, start with, you know, Brad Bickett ended up being a terrific coach at what really was my alma mater then at Bureau Valley. You know, did a great, great job there coaching. So he and I have crossed paths forever, and I had a great run Ohio. And then I was one of the first coaches to take a team to East Asia with my Augustan team 2007, and we were going to go to the kind of course the most vivid popular figure Yao Ming owned one of the teams we were going to play. So I actually called Jack with the Rockets to get a hold of Yao Ming, and Jack got on the phone and he said, you're the guy that's making it so tough on my alma mater at Illinois Wesleyan. You know, you continued to follow the Illinois basketball scene. He's even as a, you know, NBA All-Star and a front office guy. So the two guys you just mentioned in terms of small towns, both guys I can really have connected with and can relate to. But when you have a small community, there's so much interconnection. You know, the game nights are a social event, and the team is you know part of the culture of that community. When we made those runs back at Western High School, there were actually a group of fans that rented an RV and dribbled a ball, literally took turns relaying, dribbling a basketball through the old blacktops from site to site, you know, from the regional site to the sectional site to super sectional, and literally dribbled to Champaign, Illinois, and they allowed them to come in on the floor. A guy named Bob Sprouse dribbled onto the floor and laid the ball in to complete the journey that the team was on. And, you know, when on game nights in those small towns, you know, you could, you know, they say turn the last guy out of town, turn the lights off, because everybody's at the gym. And, you know, I've been back now, you know, my career was it's been really remarkable, and I've been so fortunate, so blessed, really. But I've gone back to the gym that I played in, and I was shocked to see how small it was, because I remembered it being this, you know, this arena. Well, I'd only see 200 people, but it was like an arena to me. And, you know, when I was growing up and rebounding, you know, free throws for my dad's players when I was in fourth and fifth grade. And so it's really, and it's funny, I go to games in the suburbs, And a lot of times there's not a lot of people there, and there's not a lot of energy in the gym. Well, people didn't grow up there. You know, their parents didn't go to that same school, and their grandparents, and so you lose that that connection that exists, you know, in places like we're talking about.
It's interesting you bring that up as your playing days in high school, and I look at your career and what you've done at Augie and just this impressive resume, and I always like to ask guys that do this or girls that do this and have this great success, do you ever have a moment where, like, you really step back and you truly appreciate what's going on? I think about my job. I love covering small school sports, and my favorite sport, I love small school high school basketball. And, like, the contrast for me here, I'll give you an example is what I'm looking at. So, especially in postseason basketball, when you're in the regional or sectional setting where you're normally at a small gym and it's packed, right? And it's just this energy in the gym. And I'm invested in the broadcast, and I love it, and you feel it, all right? And then the game ends, right? And there's this, like, pressure that's left out of the gym, and it's completely silent. I'm doing my post game with the coach or whatever. Nobody's there. The janitor's hoping you'll frickin' hurry up and get out of there. We want to get you. Yeah. But, I mean, the contrast of, man, this pressure and this intensity, and then the contrast of the silence, but you drink it all in. You don't. That's kind of the stuff I, like, appreciate from the packed gym that I'm there broadcasting to when I'm leaving and it's empty. And I just love that vibe that I've been able to do for 30 years. So give me, like, a Coach Gray Giovanni aha moment where you're like, man, I'm digging this profession I've been in for so many years. I'm so fortunate and I'm so appreciative. So describe something for our audience.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, when you're in the midst of it, so much of it is striving the energy that you put into every day just trying to take the next step in your career or with your team or within a season. And so I don't think you do a lot of that reflecting because you're so busy kind of grinding away at the next step. And so, you know, when I remember one of my goals in coaching, I had wanted to be a Division I head coach, and I'd worked for 12 years as an assistant, and then I had a chance to take over at Lamar University, and I was one of the three or four youngest Division I head coaches in the country. Actually, at that time, Bill Self had just gotten the Oral Roberts job, and John Calipari had just gotten the UMass job. And we all had really kind of grew up together working the Kansas basketball camps with a guy named Ted Owens, who had taken Kansas to the Final Four a couple times. And I do remember, you know, getting that that first, you know, Division I head coaching job, and we had a press conference. And, you know, so it was a big deal for us, for our family and my wife, and we had one child, a little baby, and we had this press conference at the arena, and one of the things that they'd done is they gave me the keys to a beautiful brand new Bonneville. I'll remember it was a burgundy Bonneville, and then the press conference ended, and I went into my office for a few minutes with my wife and child, and we came out and realized that we didn't know where they'd parked the car. And so here we were, I'd just gotten my dream, you know, my Division I head coaching had come to fruition. I was a head coach at Division I school, and here I was standing in the arena with my wife and child with no idea how to get back to the hotel that we were staying in. I was in an arena that seated 10,000 people. Of course, it was empty and dark, and I do remember that just feeling like, wow, you know, I've arrived. But then just moments later, you're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what am I going to do now? I mean, I looked at our schedule and we're playing Texas and Oklahoma and, you know, Ole Miss and USC. So it was pretty brief, to kind of drink it all in. But I do think the best moments of the job, you know, you certainly love the, like you said, the packed house and the energy and the, you know, the triumph and, you know, cutting the nets down like we've done a number of times, but but it is those the, kind of the quiet times with the team, you know, after a game when everybody is, you know, is there and all the energies that you put into the preparation and so on have resulted in a win. And sometimes it's not so much jubilation as it is just kind of this sense of satisfaction. And it's shared. You know, one of the great things about team sports is you're kind of part of something bigger than yourself, which it just makes it so gratifying. So I think that's probably the parts of it that I've really, and of course the relationships with the players is just so enduring. Yeah, but those are parts of it that I've certainly come to appreciate.
Great visiting with Augustana College head basketball coach Gray Giovanni. 433 and 150 is his mark at Augie in 21 seasons. We have more coming up on the WMJ Sports Line right after this.
As a business owner, you know that every year running a business brings new challenges and opportunities. The success of your business demands expertise and focus, and Country Financial can help you keep that focus by helping ensure you have the right insurance protection in place to meet your goals. Your Country Financial representative can help you create a customized insurance plan that has coverages designed just for your business. Give your agent a call today. Coverages may vary by state. Policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Contact your Country Financial Representative today. In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
John Waugh.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
In Viola, see me, Troy Mayhew.
And in Moline, see me, Steve Sim.
Office Specialist understands keeping communities safe is a priority. Office Specialist is open during this unprecedented time as an essential business. They are key in logistics for public safety, municipalities, banks, food service, healthcare, and more. Purchase items by calling 309-342-7711 to arrange curbside pickup or delivery to the Aledo area. Or go to osi.biz to order online. Office Specialists frequently sanitizes surfaces within their facility, their warehouses, and their vehicles. Office Specialists in Galesburg thanks you for your support.
Buying new is out of the question. The next best option, a quality pre-owned vehicle at a sweet price. But where to start? Progress Park Auto Sales should be first on your list and will probably be the last too once you find yourself in a warranted vehicle from their lot that is just what you were looking for. Did I say warranted? I sure did. Most of their vehicles come with a comprehensive warranty. And if they don't have what you want, they'll find it for you. Open every weekday to serve you. Progress Park Auto Sales, Route 17, Aledo.
It is the WMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning. I'm Jim Taylor. Good to have you along. It's an honor. We're speaking with Augustana College men's basketball coach Gray Giovanni. And I know, Coach, listening to you speak and listening to you talk, I know what Augustana College basketball has become. Such an attraction. Go to the game. It's a form of entertainment. But then I'm just curious, like, the balance of, you know, becoming an attraction, becoming a form of entertainment, but then also having to be a basketball program, if you understand what I mean. Yeah. So how do you deal with that balance? I guess first and foremost, it's got to be program, right? And then you think, well, the attraction and entertainment part should take care of itself.
Well, just like, you know, with players and with teams, you know, we talk about you execute fundamentals, and play with great effort, and the score will take care of itself. Well, if the score takes care of itself, you know, the energy in the gym will take care of itself. And one of the things I really value, I've got game footage from my first year at Augustana, and the camera, which was, there wasn't any TVs there, but just our video camera pans up and down following a game. And there, I mean, you could have fired a shotgun in there any direction and been safe. There's nobody there. And then it fades into a game from any one of the last, you know, 10 years where it's packed and there's this tremendous energy and so on. But you don't go into it thinking, about the end result. You know, our first team meeting every year, we put up our team goals, you know, our destinations, we call them, but then we don't talk about them again. And then all we talk about is every day in practice, our goal is to get better and grow closer. I mean, that's our daily goal, is to get better as a team and grow closer. And then the destinations, the goals take care of themselves. So, yeah, you come in, and I remember 21 years ago, so much of it was just kind of wanting to create a culture, and that's such a something you hear all the time now, but we wanted to, and I think it's interesting. You know, my first year was our only losing season. You know, we've had 20 straight winning seasons. But my first year, we went 10-15, and yet I got to the end of that year, and I felt like, you know what, we've laid the groundwork. When you play us and our players that come into this program, it's clear what's expected and how we're going to do things. Even in that first year, that was what we wanted to accomplish immediately. It was, you know, how are we going to play? You know, what are the expectations of our players? And we established that. Well, then you build on it, and, you know, you get good players, and they buy in and develop, and you work hard on fundamentals, and next thing you know, you're winning games, and you're an overnight success, right? It doesn't happen overnight, but there's steps that you have to take along the way, and you can't skip any steps, and then you have a product that people want to see. And in fact, even in our locker room, we have a series of pictures, and they depict the things that we value. So the first one is defense. It's a guy in a, you know, defensive stance, getting after a ball hand. And then it's rebounding. So we got a picture of a couple of our players in traffic getting a rebound. And then it's run, and it shows us on a fast break. And then it's play together. And, you see our team in a huddle. And then it's play, play hard, and you see players diving on the floor for loose ball. And at the end, we have a picture of one of our players cutting down the nets. And we talk about, you know, if you do all these things, then you get to play in front of a packed house and cut down nets. But, it's a step-by-step process for sure.
I want to go back to when you started playing at Buda Western, all right? And so we talk about today how the game is played at the youth level where it's all organization. You know, kids start playing youth basketball at third and in fourth grade, whatever grade is. There's always leagues to be played, and you know, there's the kids. I mean, basically, the way it works is we've conditioned the kids that this is how it is. We're going to organize it for you. There has to be a clock. There has to be a referee. You have to have either a practice jersey or a team jersey. Now, that was much different for Greg Giovanni growing up and Jim Taylor growing up, child of the 70s or the 80s, where basically kids were on their own to organize stuff. Do you long for those? I know what today's society is and what today's culture is. I get it, and we're not going to go back. But can I at least ask you, do you long for those type of days again?
I drove through Sheffield the other day, and there were two hot spots in a town of, you know, what, 900 people. But there were two hot spots where you would play. One was my backyard. Now, I'm sure part of that was because two things. The head high school coach lived in the house, and my sister was very attractive, and a lot of guys wanted to date my sister. So the games in my backyard were regular, and they were great. And then there was another place, a guy named Bobby Sprouls, who led that first team to a 29-1 season, and his basket still stands in that same driveway. And oh, wow. I drove by it, and Bobby's the CEO of a major utility company in California, and I sent him a picture of that. And, of course, he couldn't wait to get back, and we laughed about how, you know, there was certain angles on the floor where the basket was different heights. You know, the driveway wasn't level. And on one side, I don't know how many ankles got sprained because there was a ledge, you know, and if you drove right and got to about 12 feet at a certain angle, then you're going to fall off of there and get hurt. But it made for just such fun. And there, like you said, there was no start or finish. You know, you didn't have a clock. You didn't have officials. Guys just played because they loved playing. Now, I know you and I are going to sound like a couple of old guys to anybody that's in the generation that I'm coaching today. But yeah, those were different times for sure. You know, there wasn't cable TV, and the things just weren't as structured. And you know, it was safe, and you know, you'd ride your bike to the park and play all day. And that was something that, no question. And you know, Jim, when you first began talking about the small town, you talk about the sound of the snap of the nets and the chain. the thing that I remember was just the feel of the leather ball and the sound it would make when it would hit the wooden floor. And we had a junior high in the town that I grew up with, and that gym was almost always open because my father was the principal there. So we'd get in there all the time, and just the sound of that ball bouncing on that soft wood, and then, you know, the squeak of the yep. of those old Chuck Taylor Converse yep. shoes on the floor. There's a rhythm to the game. I'm actually reading right now Pistol, you know, which is the story of Pete Maravich and of course his relationship with his father, which really resonates with me because I played for my dad. But so many of the descriptions in that book kind of bring to life the you know, what it's like in a gym in a pickup game when there is no officials or fans, and yet I had as much fun playing, you know, summer pickup games as any game I ever competed in under the lights.
Well, it's interesting, and my message to a lot of people, and this is an old bald guy speaking again, is do you appreciate the history of the game enough? And I'm not talking about the grand scheme of the National Basketball Association or college basketball. I'm talking about, do you appreciate the history of the game in your own area? And I've had a chance to meet and become friends with Rich Falk, the former Northwestern basketball coach, and worked in the Big Ten office and grew up in small-town Galva, Illinois. And the one day I was interviewing him, and he's telling me the story about this park he played at in Galva, where he really learned to play the game. So one night I was coming back home from an LTC game, and I said, gosh dang it, I'm going to go to that park and see that thing where he played at. So, I mean, I'm that type of guy to say, man, I hope you appreciate the history just of the local game. And I think history for a lot of people, like kids today, of class of 2020, history for them means maybe as far back as 2005. I just think there are so many stories, especially in Illinois with small school basketball, that are just so unbelievably neat. And I'm not talking about just basketball either. I'm talking about interscholastic athletics across the board in small town that just, I guess, resonates with me because I've lived in Alito for 30 years. So I hope kids do appreciate that type of stuff, but I don't think they do.
Yeah, my first several years at Augustana, I taught a basketball theory class, and basically I just made it the history of the game. You know, and I would hand the kids out a copy of the two typed sheets that Dr. Naismith handed out in Springfield to try to keep the football and rugby players occupied during the winter months, and you know, the 13 rules that were listed on it. And you know, I had more fun with that class, and it was really fascinating to watch the kids that were in it kind of light up when you know, I'll give you a great example. I said, you know, if you've read a newspaper article, have you ever seen a game referred to, players referred to as cagers? You know, the cagers? You know, a lot of them, why do you say cagers? I said, well, you know, one of the things that happened when the game started was when the ball would go out of bounds, whoever would retrieve the ball got possession. So what happened, and the first people playing the game, now remember, there were no basketball players. This was a game that was created to occupy football players during the winter. And so it was incredibly rough. And so after a few years, players were kind of crashing into the stands, chasing the ball down, because there wasn't a rule that determined who would get possession. And so they literally put chicken wire around the court to keep the players in and keep the ball from bouncing, you know, too far away where they had to wrestle to get it. And so they literally played in a cage with chicken wire. And that was where the term cagers come from. And, you know, they're like, oh, you got to be kidding me. You know, and then I talk about, how about the term, I do this in my summer camps. And by the way, the first lecture in my summer camp, you know, for the 27 years I've been a head coach, is on the handshake. So I'm going to have to really reevaluate. I think we're going to have to do spatial awareness lecture as we move forward here. But one of the things I talk about is, you know, I say, right, let's, you know, line up top the key. Well, what do you mean top of the key? Where did that come from? You know, everybody knows where the top of the key is, right? It's the top of the circle. Well, where does that come from? Well, in the original lines of the floor, you had the circle as it is where you shoot a free throw. But the lane line was only 6 feet wide. So it was a circle and then a much more narrow lane than what we have today. And if you've ever been to your, you know, I tell the kids, you've ever been to your grandpa's, you know, old house where you put a key, a skeleton key,
yeah,
into the door to turn it. That's what it's shaped like. There's a circle with a narrow slot. And so that was the reference to, it was the keyhole, because that's what the lane looked like in its first iteration. And, you know, I mean, kids just, and I taught players, and I have fun in our summer camps with this, but I try to help them understand where some of those phrases come from and how the game has evolved. And what happened, well, Coach, why was it 6 feet? Now it's 12 feet. Well, because Wilt Chamberlain, it was too close, and, you know, the ball would come off, and he was right there. So they had to widen the lane to keep players away from each other. You know, it is funny, but the history of the game is something I have a great appreciation for.
Yeah, it's interesting how you mentioned the key. You know, kids are like, well, what's, you know, because they're so accustomed to key fob or a card or a keypad
to get
in. They have no idea. So that's interesting that you bring that up. But you're telling that story, and I'm just thinking about you growing up, your dad saying, hey, boy, go get that chicken wire for the basketball court.
One of the gyms, the small gym in our high school, still had that lane. And, you know, people just kind of didn't think much of it. But that's the lane that I oftentimes was bouncing a ball on, was that back gym with that narrow lane.
And so getting back to, you know, the your career in, you know, I think it started way back in the early 90s. You were an assistant at Wichita State, worked at Rice, then went to Lamar, so you're talking about a long career. So how much has it changed in terms of recruiting the student athlete? Is there a big change of what's going on now? And what I mean by that is, like, do you get out that much to the local high school gym, or is it mostly just done now you go to AAU summer tournaments? How does all that work?
Well, first of all, 39 years I've been coaching college basketball. And so, yes, there have been a lot of changes. And the recruiting is certainly one of the most, the areas that's been affected the most. Now, it's interesting, the Division III model of recruiting is still pretty similar to what I started with, in that you engage the high school coach, you know, the principal, the people at the high school. You know, we still, when I went to Augustana initially 21 years ago, I would go into players' homes, you know, and do home visits, because it was the family that was really going to direct the decision. Well, as the AAU, which you've referenced, the summer circuit, was really kind of proliferated, the decision-making became much more diverse, and oftentimes the evaluation settings change. So instead of just going to high school games and visiting with families, what's evolved now is you go to the summer circuit and you follow all these tournaments and so on, and the people that have an awful lot of influence on these kids and where they're going to go tend to be people outside of their family. Now, in Division III, that's not the case as much as Division I, because Division III, you know, those kids know that they need to select the best school for their long-term interests, which is why Augustana has been a great landing spot for kids, because they know they're going to go to a great school, and the kids that we're recruiting typically appreciate that their careers are going to be made outside of basketball, but they love the game. And so in Division III, it's still a kind of an old school model for the most part, although all the kids we recruit are playing on summer circuits and we watch them play. But usually the decision comes from, you know, from within the family and the player. In Division I, that's long since passed. I mean, I know a ton of kids, and coaches that have never interacted with the high school coach, have never seen a player play in a high school setting. And that's, the rules have dictated that. You know, they've restricted the amount of time, and it's interesting. Division III, we can be out all year. We can be out all year watching players. In Division I and II, you can't. They limit the windows of opportunities. And so what these events that occur, every coach goes to the same events and watch the kids in these settings, and then they begin to pursue them and interact so much with the outside influences outside the family. So I've enjoyed the fact that in Division III, you know, you're still dealing with families and kids that appreciate they need to think well past when the air is going to come out of the ball.
Yeah, and I know the program that you have established and developed, and I don't need you to name names, but I assume when you're recruiting kids, and like I said, I'm not asking to name names, but I'm sure that there are certain circumstances where this is a good player and he probably could help us basketball wise, but sorry, son, ain't gonna work. Ain't gonna play here. I mean, I'm sure you have those type of moments where you're recruiting and you know this kid could be a pretty good player at the D3 level for us, but I don't want him. I don't want his family. I don't want the people that are around him for whatever the reason. I assume you know pretty quickly with how long you've been doing it that, hey, this just ain't gonna work.
Well, it's interesting. People say, well, what do you look for in a kid? You know, what do you look for in a prospect? And as the years have unfolded, and you know, in retrospect now, as I look back at so many of the great players that we've had everywhere I've been, you know, from Rice to Oral Roberts to Valparaiso, Wichita State, Lamar, Augustana, character was such a driving force in a player's success. And you know, we talk a lot about the character of grit, you know, which is basically perseverance over time. It's the ability to stay motivated throughout the course of time, and that is the single most important determining factor in an individual's projected success, and that's certainly the case as a player. And so we want guys that are high character guys, that are intrinsically motivated and have a great core set of values. And the good thing for me, the fortunate thing is, well, that's also the kind of students that are attracted to Augustana. You know, we get it's a college that is attractive to kids that have potential and character and a vision for their life. And so those are the kind of kids that we get to interact with. And that's been one of the real joys of being at a place like Augustana, is you attract kids that I enjoy being around. You know, when I was considering leaving the Division I ranks and I came to visit Augustana, one of the determining factors in my coming was I thought it would be a great place for my sons to grow up. And at the time I came here, my sons were 20, well, let's see, another 20, they were 5, 3, and 1. And I thought they would be surrounded by, because I knew they'd be in the gym and on the campus and, you know, really grow up at Augustana. And I knew they'd be surrounded by good influences. And you know, in retrospect, I look back, and that's exactly what happened. Many of their best friends are former, you know, players of ours, and a lot of their influences were the guys that we had. So back to your point about what do we look for, and not everybody's a good fit. We want guys that are highly motivated students, and you know, come from good families, and have good character. So, you know, that's been, and I think it's interesting, Jim. You know, you talk about the fan base and the culture that we have. You see that when you watch us play. You know you're watching, you know, kids that compete, that care about each other, that have good body language. I mean, all that stuff goes into the product that eventually is on the floor that attracts fans.
Greg Giovanni with us on this Saturday morning. A great conversation. It rolls on right after this on WRMJ, WRMJ.com.
Most people understand the need for life insurance, but not many want to talk about why it's essential to your financial plan. It may seem intimidating, but it doesn't have to be. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started with Country Financial. Your Country Financial representative will work with you to find life insurance that gives you the protection you need at a price you can afford.
Contact your Country Financial representative today. In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
John Waugh.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
In Viola, see me, Troy Mayhew.
And in Moline, see me, Steve Sim.
Office Specialists understands keeping communities safe is a priority. Office Specialists is open during this unprecedented time as an essential business. They are key in logistics for public safety, municipalities, banks, food service, healthcare, and more. Purchase items by calling 309-342-7711 to arrange curbside pickup or delivery to the Aledo area. Or go to osi.biz to order online. Office Specialists frequently sanitizes surfaces within their facility, their warehouses, and their vehicles. Office Specialists in Galesburg thanks you for your support. The human foot is complex with 26 bones, 33 joints, 20 of which are actively articulated, and there's more than 100 muscles, tendons, and ligaments. That's why 6140 Run has Albert, the revolutionary 3D foot scanner. Albert helps customize your shoes specifically to meet your feet. Whether you run, walk, or on your feet for a long time, 6140 Run knows how feet come in all shapes and sizes. And with Albert, you'll get a customized, comfortable fit every time. 6140 Run carries Hoka, Brooks, Mizuno running and walking shoes, and Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. For a better fit for your feet, see 6140 Run on Main Street in downtown Galesburg.
6140 Run showroom is closed to walk-in traffic, but if you need shoes, call for an appointment.
Jim Taylor back on the WMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning. Quite a run for Great Giovanni at Augustana College. Came there in the 1999-2000 season, only one losing season, and they are a thing to behold in Division III college basketball. I'm curious, Coach Giovanni, you know, looking at your career, and when you maybe get into this profession at a young age, it's like 24 hours, 7 days a week, but you have to realize at some moment that there has to be an outlet. And I know when I've talked to very successful coaches at the high school level, a lot of guys or girls will tell me that you can't just do it 24/7, 365 days a year. You have to back off, and you have to have some other outlet. It just can't be this all the time. So what kind of is Gray Giovanni's outlet?
Well, I think in any profession, you know, you've got to have balance. But I do think coaching is unique in that for me, and again, I grew up in a unique environment. My father was a coach, and what I saw was, you know, our players were at our home all the time, and when we would go out, you know, he just was such a really a father figure to so many people, so many young men. And I think coaching is a little bit more of a calling than it is just a vocation. So it seeps in. I mean, one of the reasons I came to Augustana is because I had these three small boys, and I was never home. And I did travel. I mean, even at Lamar, at that mid-major level, you know, one night I had a radio show, one night I had a TV show, one night I'm dealing with alumni, and the two other nights I'm recruiting. So I was never home. And that was part of the draw to me to come to Augustana, was I knew that I wouldn't have some of those commitments at the Division III level, and I could invest more in my family. And that's what happened. So as far as outlets, and I got to help coach my son's little league teams and go to the martial arts competitions and just be more engaged in what they were doing. And yet, when we came to Augustana, the first thing my wife did was knock out an entire wall in our house to make it more open, because she knew that we'd be hosting our players quite often. In fact, you know, I had a player several years ago. We had a spring banquet at my house to kind of conclude the season, and I have a big cookout and give them pictures of them, framed pictures of their action and so on. And I have the seniors speak and reflect and share any ideas with the younger guys. And one of the guys got up and he said, "Coach," he said, "do you know how many times that our senior class, you know how many times we've been in your house?" And I said, said, no, I don't. He said, this is the 14th time that we've been in your home. And I said, oh, that can't be right. He said, yeah, you know, when you recruited me, now this is back, you can't do that now, but when you recruited me, you know, you had me over for a cookout, and in the summer when I was working your basketball camp, you know, we came over and you fired up the grill, and, you know, of course, Christmas, we always throw a big party for our team and have a, you know, white elephant gift exchange, and in the spring we have a bank, and sure enough, so, you know, the coaching, to say it's not 24 hours, it can be. And you have to be careful with that. And I've enjoyed that. I mean, again, the coaching is really, it's not who I am, but it's not just what I do either, you know, somewhere in between there. But being at Augustana has allowed me to have a great family life and you know, be involved with my kids as they've grown up. And is there an off season right now? Actually, you know, as recruiting winds up, typically the month of May is slow a month as there is, and yet there's always that next recruit to chase down. There's always players that you're trying to help develop. There's always alumni you're writing reference letters for, and so it's nonstop. And yet, like you said, you do have to strike a balance, because at some point you gotta, you know, put your phone on silent and you know, focus on and where you are. But it's been a great balance and something that has been a good fit for me.
Well, but that thing you just described about the kid being over at the barbecue, that's the outlet. That's not really coaching in terms of,
right,
you know, X's and O's, and we got to beat Illinois Wesleyan tomorrow night, and we got to play this, and we're going to practice this, and you got to do this ball handling drill. What you're describing,
right,
is the outlet. You know, and I'm curious, there's a coach I interviewed, a high school coach, and I always reflect back to this, because I always say that the career or professional development for you individually, and I asked a high school coach here, that was last summer, I remember I was doing a long-form interview, and I said, well, what would Coach Brad Dixon of the summer of 2019 say to Coach Brad Dixon of the summer of 1999 when he first started? He goes, oh, man, he goes, I'd probably fire myself back in 1999. What's been the biggest kind of career adjustment or development for you? Because I know all young kids, you know, and I know in the media business we all have egos. Some people will admit they don't, but we have egos in this business. And I know, especially when you get into it at a young level, and you were so fortunate with your father and the relationship you had with him. You were around basketball, and I'm sure you probably came into this thing, man, I know this game inside and out. I've grew up with it. But there had to be some type of moment where you say, man, I really don't know a lot of things, and I still have some things to work on. When you look back, when we're talking to Gray Giovanni, this great success in 2020, and you look back in your coaching career, and I say, is there like a cringeworthy moment for you where you're like, man, I can't believe I did that?
Yeah. Well, I first of all, let me back up a second. In terms of getting ready to beat Illinois Wesleyan tomorrow night, we've beaten them 31 times in 21 years. With 31 times we beat them, 19 times we just ran out of time before we could come back and get them again, Jim. So you reference our longtime rival. Not that anybody's counting. But I made sure Jack Sickman knew.
Well, let me stop that, because when I did my interview with Jack Sickman, I said my kid goes to Augie, and he goes, man, they're terrorizing Illinois Wesleyan now. But anyway, I digress. Back to you.
That's what he shared with me, too, and it was really fun to hear that from the all-time great from Illinois Wesleyan. But we've had a great rivalry. But I will tell you, I have said this, like some of those kids I coached at Lamont, I've said, man, I feel like I need to apologize to you for how little I knew back then. I thought I had all the answers. But I can tell you, Jim, very vividly, one of the great, you talk about aha moments. I was probably my third or fourth year at Lamar. I was, you know, young. I was like mid-30s, really chasing in a fast-paced environment, you know, Division I head coach. And my father retired from LaSalle Peru, so he had coached there for 16 years, at Butte Western and 3 years at Bureau Township. And my mother somehow pulled off what was supposed to be a retirement roast. So she invited 35 years worth of former players. to come back, and we gathered in Princeton, Illinois, and at a big hall, and he didn't know it. So she had done it. She got all these players, and she had assigned a player kind of from each era to get up and have some fun at his expense. It was going to be a roast. And I came back from Texas, and here I was, this budding young Division I head coach with all the answers. And I came, and I, of course, sat at the head table, and she brought my father in, and there he walked in, and there basically looked around, and there was his whole life of coaching. There it was, 35 years worth of players. It was astounding. And they, you know, they gave him a standing ovation, and he came up the front and they said, okay, and Lanny Slevin, who I know you know.
Oh, great. He's a legend, man. Great. I love Lanny Slevin.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the great voice of the Cavaliers and, you know, IHSA and so on. So Lanny's the MC, and he gets up and introduces the first player. And the first player gets up, and he kind of tells a story that's kind of funny, you know, about my dad. And then he kind of stutters and stammers, and he says, but I'll never forget, you know, Coach, what you did for me when I didn't have any confidence and I was struggling and didn't know if I could go to college, and you encouraged me. And, you know, it's kind of this heartfelt thing. He's like, oh, geez, okay. And the next guy gets up, and the same thing happens. He goes to tell a story. Next thing you know, he's in tears. Talking about how, you know, when my mother passed, Coach, I'll never forget the, you know, the encouragement that you gave me. And it just went on and on. And it finally was my turn to speak. And I got up and I said, you know, this is the worst roast I've ever been to. you guys aren't funny. But it just struck me. And here I was, you know, and I was young in my career. And all I was thinking about was trying to win the next game and you know, have a great season and get the LSU job, you know. And I came away from that really appreciating that what was going on in coaching, at least in my father's case, and I think in most cases, is you're influencing young men. You're a part of their development. And I think I became more intentional, more conscious of that as I moved forward. Now if you don't win, you're going to get fired, certainly at the level I was at then. But what I also learned was, well, the more you invest in these guys, the more they're going to give to you. The more they're going to want to play hard. And people ask me all the time, you know, because when you look at August Andrews, what is our, kind of our identities? They play so hard. And people say, oh, you guys just play so hard. How do you get them to do that? Well, they know I care about them. And that's what I learned from my father, or what I saw. He never said that. But I watched it, I watched all these guys get up to talk about him, and they were all guys that were in our backyard. They were guys that I saw him taping their ankles. I saw him patting them on the back. I saw him barking at them and challenging them. But I saw the love that he had for them. And that somehow transferred into a bunch of wins and great success. But the real legacy that he had was in those relationships. And I just hope and pray that's when I'm done, that I have some sense of those developmental processes that I got to be a part of.
All right, that is a perfect way to end our conversation today. Wow, that is great. Coach, you've been great for the whole hour. Really appreciate it. And I tell you, it's a treat to watch Augustana College basketball. It's quite a program and quite a form of entertainment in the Quad Cities area. So keep it rolling, and really appreciate your generous time this morning. Thank you very much.
Well, Jim, I appreciate you, and I know you could be in an awful lot of different markets. I know the job that you do, and I appreciate, as you said, 30 years there, and an awful lot of folks listening to you. So my pleasure.
All right. Great Giovanni with us on the WMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning.